Good morning, guys. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Just wanted to formally welcome everyone to the men's breakfast. And hope you enjoyed the breakfast. Very filling. And having filled our tummies, I think we're going to fill our minds now. We have with us today Dan Sneed. He's come to visit us at New Life a few times over the years. In fact, how many times have you been to see us, Dan, over the years? Has it been
more than two?
How many years? More than two. Well, I remember first encountering, can I say, Dan Sneed in 2001. I say encountering because I actually was given an audio tape of one of his sermons at New Life, and I found it really challenging for me. I was a young Christian at the time, and you know, over the years, I've listened to Dan a number of times, and I've found him to be very encouraging, loves Jesus, and really, really down to earth and a gifted speaker. So, without any further delay from me, can I just ask you to put your hands together for Dan Sneed?
Thank you.
Good morning. How are you guys doing? Now, I may sit, I may do this, but it's security, and I need all the security. You guys are scary, and so I need all the security I can get. And so you're doing good? Good? Things been going well? And when I was here, what, about this time last year? End of October, okay. Good. And yeah, every time I walk into this room, I remember the infamous Candlelight Men's meeting. In fact, I tell people about that every once in a while, that I'm probably the only speaker you'll ever meet that have spoken at a men's candlelight dinner. And of course, that raises all kinds of questions in their mind. But that was an unforgettable night. And I don't remember anything else about the night. I don't remember if the speaker had anything to say that was worth listening to, but I'll never forget the candlelight. And so, great memories of. I don't know how many times I've been to. I don't even know if I could. It's been. What year did I first come? Do you remember? I was 2 years old. Okay. See, he doesn't even remember the first year. Very impressive. I must have made a real hit the first year. Can't remember when it was. But it's been a lot of times, and I feel, you know, very much at home here and very much at home with you guys. And so thank you for not only for inviting me back to speak at the church, but to be with you. Every time I really, really loved this time that we have together. And it's especially because the food is always great. Whether it's breakfast or dinner. And I kind of go back and forth thinking, now do I really want them to do a men's breakfast or the dinner with the curry? Which is the best here? And so I think maybe we should do both, a men's breakfast and a men's dinner. And so anyway, you guys, I assume the questions came from all of you. Am I making a wrong? Okay. I believe that too. I'm glad pastors go through this, because they filter out the difficult ones, and they put them all on my paper, so they don't have to deal with them. And so I'm going to sit down and see. For me, how I feel about, oh, this is better. Feel about something is really important. And if I feel better standing up, then it's okay. If I feel better sitting down, then I'm even more okay. But what I wanted to do is I want to pray again, and then I want us just to take time and see where we go. What kind of time frame do we have? Okay. 5 minutes? Okay. Well, that's easy. Yes, no, no, yes. There's the answers here. Lord, thank you for this time that we have together. Thank you for your love, and thank you for a group of men who really desire to walk with you, who want their lives to make a difference, who really want to represent you in a way that people can get a hold of it and not just to look and be spiritual in a kind of a weird sense, but really want to know you and be able to take what they know and invest it in the lives of people all around them. And Lord, I just really ask that you will use this time, and that together we will hear you. And when I say that, Lord, I realize that, I mean, I don't even pretend to have all the answers, but I think together there are things that you will bring out during this time that will give some answers to people, and I trust you for that, Lord. So really, will you come and use this time in a very, very clear and special way, in Jesus' name. Amen. On this list of questions, I think they picked the ones that seem to be most common. And there's a few of them when I glanced at, I thought, yeah, you could tell this came from a group of men. And because just the nature of the question, it's like every men's meeting are asking these questions. You know, questions like, how do I deal with lust? How do I deal with pornography? I mean, those are men's questions. Let's just kind of move through them. I don't know that we'll get to them all. And I want you to feel free to add. We can really kind of have a little bit of a discussion, and you don't need to just sit there and listen to me. It's not like I'm the answer man, that I have the answer to these. Most of the questions I'm looking at, I think, you know, these are pretty common questions that all of us deal with all the time. And so they're questions that I battle with and try to work through just as much as you do. And so I would love to have your input as well. And if you say something that really makes sense, then I will take full credit for it. And so anyway, the first question on this list is, how can I make honest friendships with men? How can I make honest friendships with men? I'm not quite sure what the honest means, as if you could be dishonest. But how can I make honest friendships with men? I think friendship is an extremely important thing. Men probably have them far less than women do. And our friendships tend to be much more surface than women. Women tend to go for a much deeper heart friendship, and they can share their lives with one another for the most part. And when they say they have a friend, they're talking about someone that they're really sharing their heart with and their emotions with and deep stuff with. They can kind of open their lives to. For most of us, when we talk about a friend, we're talking about maybe the guy sitting next to us in this room right now. Or we're talking about someone that maybe we go to a soccer game with, or that we, you know, watch a football match on television with, or something like that. Most relationships with men tend to be much more surface. And around a project, or around a sports activity, or something of that nature, most of us find it much more difficult to really open to one another. We're almost afraid of it. Now, that doesn't mean that we all are. I find that a younger generation of men are much, much more open, that they're willing to talk about a lot of the deep stuff. And I think part of that is that we've begun to really drop the attitude that, you know, that men don't, that we don't go there. We're strong, we're tough. We don't have problems. We're strong. We can do it. And we don't need anyone else to help us. And that used to be a lot of thinking, whether we ever really believed it or not, that used to be a lot of the thinking that most men had. And I think in a younger generation, that's really changing pretty rapidly. And I think that's incredibly positive, because we need one another, and we need to be able to share our deepest hearts with one another. And we need to be safe with one another. And so I think that honest friendship today is probably more likely than it would have been even 25 years ago. Because, again, friendship was very surface. Today, it's becoming more and more talk about heart stuff. But again, I think for some of us, that's still really difficult. To really begin to open up to another man is a difficult thing. And so I think it starts with, if you're talking about how do I do it, with being real. You know, just, you know, being real and not trying to be Mr. Wonderful. Not trying to be the man with all of the answers that has, you know, I think it even has to do with how we conduct ourselves, with how we look. You know, I think there's a look that we can put on that says, I don't need you, I've got it all together. And I, you know, I know how to do that. I mean, that's, you know, being a pastor, we have another level that, you know, we have another mask called the pastor mask that makes it even more, you know, we know more about it than anybody when the reality is we really don't. But so I think a lot of it starts with being real and being willing to be vulnerable, which means that I'm willing to let you see my flaws and willing to talk about the things that I struggle with. And I'm willing to open myself to you with my, not sit around and talk about my problems. I don't mean that we need to sit and whine at each other all the time. But I'm willing to tell you where I've been. I'm willing to tell you the experiences of my life. I'm willing to tell you the things I struggle with. And in being vulnerable like that, it automatically opens other people. I found as a leader, one of the things, vulnerability is something I value very highly. Transparency is something to me that's really important, especially in a leader, but I think it's important in all of us. And I find that the more open I am, the more open people around me become, because they feel safe. If you can detect in me that I'm very guarded in what I say, and I'm not willing to be very open with you, then chances are pretty good you're not going to be open with me. And now when I say that, doesn't mean that I'm wanting to tell you everything that ever happened to me or, you know, air all my dirty laundry. I don't think that's what we mean. But I want to be willing to talk about whatever. I want to be willing to show you that I'm as human as you are and that I struggle with things just like you do. And once I do that, I find that people begin to open up. And, you know, one of the things that I've discovered over the years, that one of the key things that lock us up is shame. Shame locks more people up than anything I can think of. And shame says, hide it. You know, real men don't talk about that, or they don't struggle with that. Hide it. Nobody else has ever experienced this, so you better keep it to yourself. And most of the time, kind of thinking that there's something really wrong and that nobody else has ever experienced it. And so I'm not willing to open up and be the first one to admit I experienced that. But the reality is we all go through pretty much the same things. But we tend to not want to open that up to people. But that's, I think, extremely important. Creating an atmosphere of openness and transparency, with good wisdom. You know what I mean by that? That we're not just throwing everything out there, and there is a right place to say things, a right place to open up, and there's places that are not so smart to open up. But I think that's a key thing. I'm willing to be vulnerable, so that gives me a greater chance to build an honest relationship with the men that I'm around. Yes.
So, can you specify an example of what would be, when would be wise and unwise to?
Okay. I think usually I find that if I'm opening up things I have been through, that is generally much wiser. I create a sense in which I am letting you know my life. I am free to talk about it. Now, if it's something that includes someone else that you could, by opening up, could possibly bring some damage to them, then you need to be really careful with that. Because I'm open doesn't mean that I have the right to talk about things that someone else was involved in that could be very harmful to them. So I think there's a point of wisdom there. I also think you've got to some degree have a sense of who you're talking to. Because there's some things that, you know, that this is maybe a bad scripture to use, but I think you'll get the message. There's a scripture that talks about not casting your pearl before swine. And my interpretation of that basically is that, I mean, it's not calling anybody a pig or a swine, but the reality of the example is that a pearl is worthless to a pig. They don't care. I mean, it's nothing, has no value to them. And so you throw a pearl to a swine, they're just going to trample it. They're going to, you know, it'll get mixed in with the mud and maybe even eaten because they have no sense of value for it. So when I lay certain things out that people are not able to receive or it won't be of any value to them, then I'm probably making myself vulnerable in a way that could be actually become a stumbling block to them. You understand what I mean by that? Some people, you know, I have friends that I could open up my, you know, current struggles or something I'm going through, and they would immediately respond to that because they know me and they know, you know, my heart. Other people would be like, And it wouldn't be just a shock that I said that. It would be much more, they couldn't deal with it. And for instance, here's an example, not using myself, but I was in a thing a while back where there was a group of people in a school. It was a Youth with a Mission school for Crossroads School, which is older, 35 and up. And most often husband, wife, and but, you know, singles as well. And God was doing some amazing things. And one of these men felt like he'd carried this thing for years. And he and God really touched him and was bringing some deep healing. And he felt like he needed to confess it. And so he just, without any warning, he just wanted to open up. And they had been together quite a while, like number of weeks, so they knew each other pretty well. But he just basically talked about a situation where he had raped this woman. And he really was careful in what he didn't just get into, no detail, but he just talked. Well, I don't think he realized that there were women sitting there that had been raped. And so when he says this, it produces all this stuff in them that they weren't ready to handle. And so instead of it being a point of freedom for him, it ended up being a huge issue with some of these women. And I don't mean just they were hurt and responded out of hurt. They were angry. And maybe you can say that they needed to go through that to deal with their issue, but I don't know that that's ever my right to decide you need to go through something to deal with your issue. And so that's the kind of thing I mean. Now, I might be able, if that was me, I might be able to sit down with a friend and say, this is what happened. But to do it in front of a group of people, even if they're just a group of men, you know, in reality, there could be men sitting here that have been through that, or that have had a wife that went through it that caused huge issues for years in their marriage. And you stand up and say, "I did this." Now, again, I think it's right to be able to confess that and deal with it, but that may not be something you'd ever want to say to a group of people. And not because you don't want people to know that you were so stupid to do that, as much as taking them into consideration as to what it might do to them. So I think there's one of the limits. If by what I say in vulnerability risks a deep issue with you or hurting someone else, then I need to be very, very careful. Vulnerability doesn't mean I get up and say, "Hey, you know, I can't stand Paul. He's always..." That's not vulnerability. That's stupidity, really. I mean, who doesn't like Paul? I mean, come on. You've got to be really dumb not to like Paul. But I mean, you know what I mean? Because I want to be open and honest doesn't mean that I have the right to say all kinds of things about you or all kind. You know, it doesn't mean that I have the right just to throw my opinion around like you deserve my opinion. And so there is the wisdom of what to say and what not to say. Does that help? What's your name again, Nick? okay. Because, again, there are things that you have to be really careful with. And especially as you're getting to know someone, and especially if you're talking about in a group of people, I tend to want to be open. If you ask me questions about certain things in my life, I would be very open to talk about them. But I'm not going to sit up here and tell you everything I ever did. I don't think you need that. I don't see why you would be interested in it. And I do run the risk of hitting something that could be harmful to you. And so there really isn't anything that I wouldn't talk about because I, you know, dealt with stuff and I'm okay with it. But I don't automatically think you need to hear everything I've been through. So vulnerability doesn't mean I just talk about anything and everything. And I have to be selective in what I say, but I'm willing, I'm open, I want to be. Does that make sense? Any other questions or thoughts about that might be helpful?
It's just me, but I find it takes quite a long time in terms of developing relationships. Is that just me, or is that a guy thing, or are we all different? Some people as well.
I think it's probably a little bit of all of that. I think it is a guy thing. Guys are much more guarded at that level than women generally about deep issues. I think also it could be you, your personality, who you are. And I think we've always got to take that into consideration. Being open and vulnerable doesn't mean I violate who I am. And or that I expect people to violate who they are. And because I'm open, does that automatically mean that I should try to force you to be open? Absolutely not. But so I think it depends an awful lot on the person themselves and their temperament and their makeup. I think it's more a guy thing to be more cautious. I think those are definitely there. But again, some people find it easy to open up with numbers of people. Others, it may be one friend that they can go to. I think all of us need someone that we can be really gut-level honest with. I think that's extremely healthy. I have friendships that, you know, that know everything there is to know about me. And sometimes I wish they didn't, but they do. And on the other hand, I'm incredibly grateful that they do, where I don't have to be anything but who I really am for them. And for me, that's been a huge, you know, there are people I can't fool very well. And I think that's healthy. But I know that they're committed to me and that the relationship is strong. And so I think, again, it doesn't mean you're open with everyone, but you need those people in your life that you can really be able to the deepest stuff you can open up to. But that usually takes long-term relationship where you've really learned to trust that person. And that, for some of us, it's a struggle because we're so afraid that if we really open up, then people are going to see how human we really are and they'll reject us. So that...
In terms of relationships, what practical things, what's the takeaway from us here today? Phil, I'd like to be a bit better. What practical tips would you give about how to do that? What would you say would be good things to do in terms of developing?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the one of the key things, of course, one is a willingness to do it. That's probably where it starts. I'm willing. I want that. Another one would be to find where there are connections, where there's someone that you are drawn to, that there's a relationship that's beginning to be built there. and that you connect with more than maybe others. And then I would say you probably start by taking small steps, by opening up little things in your life and finding ways that the two of you can share where you've been and what you've done. And one way is, if you're dealing with something, say, currently, is to find someone that you trust, that you've built somewhat of a relationship with, that you can say, hey, I've been struggling with lust. Most men can say that pretty easy, and we kind of look and say, yeah, a real man. So that's a safe one in some ways. And so, but I've been struggling with lust. Can you help me? Can you pray with me about that? I mean, see, that's kind of a starting point. And most men are going to look at you and say, well, yeah, don't we all? So you really are in some ways safe there, though it seems like maybe a little extreme. But you just begin slowly. And then it's like anything else. You got to build the relationship. And so you don't go around just throwing stuff out. You'll end up having your head cut off. But just build the relationship. Talk about the stuff that you feel you can, and watch and see how that, and then when you're able to, where there comes where you can really get into one another's life and to deep areas, that takes time. For most of us, that's a time thing, and there's no other way than spending time to do it and growing in trust and growing in relationships. So, but I would find someone that you can begin to start. You want it, so find someone that you can begin to. And one of the best ways I know is you can talk about some past experiences, but also just it's always safe to say, would you pray with me about this kind of a general topic? And then you go from there. That work? Yes.
How do you deal with it? Because something more harsh, someone comes to you with a lot of problems, a non-Christian problems. How do you deal with that? Because it's obviously more difficult to be able to get a Christian.
Make sure I'm understanding. Someone that's a non-Christian, and they come to you, a non-Christian, comes to you with a problem. The last part of that, you can't handle it. And they've come to you with a problem, you can't handle it, and so what do you do with it, apart from praying? If someone comes to you, a non-believer, with a question that you can't handle, and then you want to take that to someone else, like Paul, to talk about, and then come back to that person with, I don't think that that's necessarily bad. As long as you keep it from who, if you go to Paul with a question about what that person shared without him knowing who that person was, I don't know that that's bad, as long as you don't involve that person in the converse in what Paul's saying. Then you can go back or you can easily say, I don't know that I have an answer to what you're struggling with. Is it okay for me to talk with my pastor about that, or my leader about that, or a friend about that? But I think you can also not necessarily have to ask if it's okay. If you go to someone, if you say to them, let me think about this and I'll get back to you, and you go to someone and then talk it over, get some wisdom without letting them know who you're talking about. So it's kind of a generic question out there. I think that can be very wise. If you don't have answers to something, don't try to give them, because that usually backfires on you. And I've learned that from a lot of experience. That's why I wanted to try to be more clear on what I was, because I find that it's easy to think you got it and answer it, But so I think if you really, if you want to be involved to help that person, I don't think it's wrong to say, I'll get back. Let me think about it. I'll get back to you. And go to Paul. Go to someone. But make sure that you're not going and saying, I went to, you know, and Johnny's got this problem, and can you, because then that's not your place to do that. But if it's someone that most likely Paul doesn't know, you're needing an answer, I don't think that's a betrayal of trust. But then I would be careful in how I presented it back to the person, that they felt comfortable. Sometimes you're just as well off not to say that you took it to someone else and ask for advice. Some people you could say that with and be okay. So that all, again, depends on the person. And I don't think it's ever wrong if someone comes to you and you can't quite handle it. I don't think it's wrong to say, I can't. One, first of all, saying I don't know, let me find an answer, is always smart. But if you just can't handle it by just being able to say, you know, that for whatever reason, that's a real difficult one for me. Emotionally, I can't handle that. Maybe I can help you get to someone who could help you. So I don't think you need to assume that you've got to. Now, did I answer it or did I? I'm not, you know, I wanted to make sure I'm getting the right picture here. Did I answer it okay? Okay. I find that after about 2 days after a world trip, that I get this kind of dull ear. And of course, some people think I have them all the time. But it's just kind of, they're just kind of a dull feeling. And so it's not so easy to understand or hear. Okay. Anything else?
Well, we have friends who we think could benefit from talking to a spouse. But maybe a lot of the stuff you've been talking about is where someone's kind of, they make the first step. It's on us to make the first step, but where we can see that someone else would benefit from talking to us, how do we go about approaching that person?
Approaching the person asking the question? Drawing the question from them? I think the first part of that always is creating a safe atmosphere, where they feel safe, that you do really care. People don't open up where they don't feel safe. And if they do, they may open up to a degree, but they're not really going to open up. If you don't feel safe, you're not going to open up. So I think it comes down to creating that kind of atmosphere. And I think you can. And I don't say this, and I'm not even sure how I've done it, but I find that people open up to me with all kinds of stuff. They don't even know me. They just open up and stay this. I mean, I'm kind of blown away at times. But I think somehow they feel that I'm a safe person, and so they can. So I think there's a way, and again, like I said, I'm not sure how I've done that. I think probably more God than me. But I think you try to create a safety that they know that there's someone who does care, and that they can talk it over with, and it's not going to be spread all over the place. And then, so you're the more comfortable they become with you, And ways you find maybe to spend some, like if it's someone at work, you find ways to spend maybe a little extra break time or whatever. Build a relationship and then begin to see how they'll open up. Or even share some of your own stuff. That's often the best way to, when I open up to you, it gives you permission to open up to me. And you become comfortable because I've been willing to be vulnerable with you. So I think you've got to create that atmosphere first, and then draw. It's really hard to just kind of push them to spit it out until they're safe. And even then, some people, it's so guarded because they've had so much, or they have been betrayed. And so they're so guarded that it can take time to get to a place where they can really, really trust. Did that answer that? Okay, good. Anything else on that before we don't have anything until curry time tonight, so. But I really do think that it's a lifestyle. Again, wisdom, because there's some things that you don't need to know. I don't think being vulnerable means I just go around telling everybody anything. They don't need to know. Others, that wouldn't be wise for them to know for their sake. They're not able to handle it. But then there are those situations where I can open up, and I need to have those situations. And there needs to be, you create a safe place. That's crucial. You become a safe person. You create a safe place. And demonstrate, in doing that, demonstrate a certain amount of care towards them. That you do care about them as a person. And when they know you're safe, when they know that you genuinely care, even then it can be very, very hard to open up. Because, see, shame basically says there's something wrong with me that cannot be fixed. And sometimes even the feeling of God can't even fix it. So I'm not likely to open up too quickly if I don't feel that it can be fixed. Why would I do that? It's hard to open up anyway. Especially for men, hard to open up. And if I feel it's impossible, it can't be fixed. And that's exactly what shame says, that something's wrong that can't be fixed. So I'm not likely to open up, because if it can be fixed, it can be hard enough to open up. If I'm hopeless and I know that it, or feel that it can't be fixed, then why would I take the risk? What's the point? So a lot of people carry deep secrets all of their life that are really not that difficult. But something sold them on the thing that said there's something wrong that can't be fixed. And so you don't open up, because if you open up, it's worthless. And you're going to maybe even risk rejection or whatever. So we just close up and don't do it. So that safe, hopeful environment where you feel safe and yet there is an environment. That's why I think it's always great when a man can share his testimony, can share his story, because those are usually the time that people come the most, the closest to, okay, I just heard that he went through this, I can share. But those, for men especially, women tend to be much faster at this, but for men especially, it takes time and usually degrees of openness. And so that's, but it's really an important, I think it's crucial. I work with young leaders all the time. And one of the things I, over and over again, build friendships. Because most leaders I know don't really have friends. They have acquaintances. Or they have friends that are built around a project. Christian leaders, we're famous for friends that help us with a project. And that's as far as it goes. And we need, again, for most of us, that's not a lot. But we need those that can speak into our lives, that know us and care about us enough that they can look and say, I have friends that can look at me and say, Dan, that's about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. What are you thinking that for? But I've known them for years. We've built a strong relationship. They've saved me over and over again because I can't fool them, and I really don't want to anymore. And they can speak right into. But they also treat me with a great deal of care and respect. And that creates a sense of openness in me. So I think that's really an important. It must be time for. I think probably the best way to handle that, at least for me, would be. And I know the person fairly well. Again, there are certain levels of I talked to a young man not too long ago who I know pretty well, and he's been really struggling, and I just straightforward said, keep your pants zipped up. And that was, you know, but I can do that with him. And I probably could do that with others. If you can sometimes create a little lightness on it, like keep your pants zipped up, that really is, it's kind of funny, but I think it makes the point pretty clear. But I think one of the things you can easily do, and I've done this lots of times, just sit down and say, you know, can we talk about your, not the specifics, you know, don't go there, you don't need that, you don't need to encourage them to talk about it, but can we talk about the whole sexual thing, because I'm concerned about you. It isn't a matter, I'm not here to pronounce the judgment, or I'm not here to tell you how sinful you are, but I know what it will do to you and what it will do to that young woman. And let's talk about this honestly for a minute. I mean, it's your choice. I can't tell you what to do, and I care about you regardless of what your choice is, but let's just honestly talk about this for a minute. Now, I think for the most part, I find that young men, young people, they're that honest. I think that's one of the challenges us older guys have, is that we're not used to this, that kind of honesty, like, I'm doing it. You know, we would have never told anybody we would have never brought it up. I think the advantage to today is that there is a little shame involved in it, so they're willing to talk about it more. And then it's got to be approached from, at least in my opinion, the consequences of it, what it actually, spiritually, emotionally, what's actually going on, rather than making it a sin issue. Now, I think it is a sin issue. I'm not saying it's okay. But what I'm saying is, I think in dealing, especially with young people today, you've got to approach it in a different way. And it, for me, it's been in what it actually is doing in you, because most of them, I mean, I've had lots of young men look at me and say, you know, Dan, the girls, they're expecting it. First date, if I don't, they don't want, they think something's wrong. And in my day, I mean, that was just absolutely, Christian, non-Christian, it happened, but it was not the norm. Not at least on a first date. And a first date now, it's like, okay, it's not a date till you jumped into bed. I mean, but they're not realizing the consequences. They're not realizing the consequences on their emotions, on her emotions, on the spiritual life of either one of them. And it can have huge. And I've tried to hit it more from that rather than that's just sin and quit it. And I think, again, they've got to make the choice. And you don't want to make it a judgmental thing where you close the door, so that when they begin to realize this is really bothering me, that they don't feel free to talk to you because you already judged them. And that's been kind of what I'm in the process of learning, because it's easy to come off and state straightforward what you think. And even if you do, you need when always need to be really honest. So they're willing to be honest, but again, what's wrong with it? And it's not sufficient to say that God said it's wrong. You know, this again, you know, when I was a young man, that was sufficient. God said it's wrong. It's wrong. Quit. But that's not today. And maybe we have to help them get to that point that they see, just because God knows what He's doing. But it there's a process there. Yes.
Same age as you, and like, or people who are just friends with you, how do you approach people? Like, you think you see people doing stuff wrong. Like, I went to school with, like, it's quite a lot of Christians there and stuff, but if you see somebody saying wrong, and you're quite good friends with them, how would you approach them? Can you just not? Do you have to wait for, like, how do you create that safe?
Yeah, I don't think you have to. If you see something, always the first thing you want to do with it is pray. You know, I see my friend John doing, and Lord, what do I do about it? What do I say? Do I say anything? What? So I would always start with praying, and praying for that situation that God will, if you feel it's like something that they shouldn't be, it's harmful, that God will really open their eyes. That's where I would begin. But then I would, if depending again the depth of the relationship, I would find a place where I could be open with them. And but the thing that's important is to keep it from the judgment category. Because people tend to, you know, people aren't lining up to get judged. And so that doesn't tend to work with people. But finding ways to be open and honest, and have, you know, kind of like, have you thought about what this might be doing? Or, I see this, and I you know, it really concerns me. Or because you're my friend, and I really do care a lot about you, I see this kind of thing. So I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to. Is it okay to talk about it for a minute? And you're asking them for permission to talk to them about it. And once they open up a little bit, then again, you can should be able to talk about it. But keep it from a judgment call. That's what I think the church has been known for, is passing judgment. And that's not our job. That's but it is in relationship, there should be a place where I can be honest with you about something I see in your life that I think could be damaging to you. And because it's not real relationship, if I can't be open, if I can't at least say, you know, I see something that could be very destructive for you. And so I think but again, it depends on the depth of relationship. But if you keep it from judgment, now again, I think some people are going to take judgment regardless of how you couch it. But you've got to be, I would try to approach it as less judgmental as possible. But at the same time, a younger generation, I find to be brutally honest, actually. And so I think you can be pretty straightforward. But again, without judgment, unless it's something they just decide to take. But I think you've got to start with, Lord, is this something I need to address? Is it the right time? There's also the timing on some of these things. There's a time that I'm open and, you know, vulnerable to you. There's other times that I'm not. And so you've got to have a certain amount of feel. And the only way, one, in relationship, you get more feel of that. But also, Lord, what do you want? What are you saying? How do I approach him? I know you care about him. How do I approach him to get the best results? And or do I? Do I just need to pray about it and ask you to move on their heart? Or, Lord, if not, will you show me the right time to say something? But it, I would say, always begins with prayer. Lord, what do you want me to do? And if you don't feel he's saying do it, then just be cautious until you get the freedom to do it. And then, too, if you find that the person is really resistant, then that just may be a place where you have to back off and say, okay, I mean, Lord, you're going to have to get them to a place that we can talk about it. Don't feel that you are responsible to correct everything in everybody's life, because you're not. And even in friendship, you're not responsible to correct something. You're responsible to share when you can in the way you should. But you don't feel like you've got to be the great corrector. Or, you know, some of these guys, I don't know if you have them here or not, we have them in the U.S. on the radio, they become God, the Bible answer man, you know, and they are the guardians of truth. And, oh, God, have mercy on you if you do anything that they don't think is truth. And they become incredibly judgmental. and feel it's their obligation to let you have it. And I don't quite find that biblically anywhere, but they've taken that role. And so same with your friends. That's not your role, but out of love and care, you're going to want to find a way to talk about it at the right time, at the right moment. But again, you're not responsible for their... Don't ever take on responsibility for someone's behavior. You know, once you do that, you can't really love them anymore. It's so easy to do. I find this is something that pastors do a lot and that parents do a lot. Our value comes from how well our congregation does or how well our kids do, we think. And once you take that on, and I'm talking about really kids as they get older, once you take that on, then the problem becomes, so that I feel good about me, I have to make you behave because you reflect on me. And if you don't behave, then I've got to control you to make you behave. And if you still won't, then I really have to reject you and say you're just a rebel and won't listen. I've got to find a way to make it clear that it isn't my fault you're doing this. And I think that robs us from being able to genuinely love people because we're trying to control them and control their behavior, and we can't do that. Make sense? And I do think that's a huge issue at times. And I know as a parent, that's been, as kids got to adult years, that becomes a big struggle. Because we think everybody judges me because of, you know, did my kid show up in church this morning or whatever? And then I've got to come down and make sure they do. And it just, and pastors will do the same thing. So you got to be careful with that. Okay? I don't know. It's 11. I don't know what you're thinking. I could talk forever. Well, there's tons of stuff. We only got to the first question. With all the wisdom around here, I think you'd work through these questions by then. Let's stop and pray. And then let me pray. Then let's maybe take time to pray around our tables for a minute. And how do I become the friend that people need? I think there's a world out there that really is so wanting connection, and yet in today's world, it's you know, there's a lot of things that do seem to disconnect us today. In some ways, we're the most, you know, knowledge and all this stuff is, you know, us older guys, it's like, for knowledge, you don't need us for a minute. You've got more at your fingertips. My 8-year-old grandson, his words to me all the time, Grandpa, Google it. And he'll go in, and whatever question he has, he knows the button to push to get the answers. And he's 8 years old. And you know, some of his answers are really good ones, but somehow we begin to believe that Google has the answers to everything. And believe me, they think they do. I'm amazed how many spiritual questions they answer. I mean, they just, you know. So information, you don't need. In my generation, we still needed the old guys for information because we didn't have it all. But the thing that's lacking is wisdom. What to do with that information, how to live a life. Google can't tell you how to do that. And so I think that's an important thing. Relationship is always crucial. And so how do I build meaningful relationships? How do I speak into the lives of my friends and open a door that they can feel comfortable enough and yet not loose? You know, where they don't feel like, oh, just anything goes around, Dan. But at the same time, where they feel, where they can be open and honest, and they won't be judged, but they will be, truth will be spoken. And that's not always an easy place to come to. Lord, for most of us as men, it's relationships are a little harder to navigate than women experience. On the other hand, I do see a younger generation of men that are far more open. and far more relationally oriented than my generation was. And Lord, I ask that you will give us wisdom. I really think that the major thrust of the gospel in the days ahead will go far more through friendships and relationships than evangelistic meetings. And so, Lord, I just really ask that you'll give us wisdom how to do that in a way that people will be open and respond. Our hearts are that they encounter you and that they begin to get their life together for their own sake. And so, Lord, how do we do it? How do we do it? How do we reach out from the group of men sitting here to the men outside the door that really are looking for answers, really needing hope, and yet don't know where to find it? How do we do that? Lord, show us how. Show us how to do that. And Lord, I ask even for us sitting in this room that maybe it needs to start in us that we struggle with building relationships, that we really don't know where to go with them or how to develop them. And so, Lord, I just really ask that you will, in this just these few moments of prayer together, that you will begin to give us answers and to help us be able to let the barriers down. And Lord, I ask for some sitting here today that shame, they've got walls of shame built, and they're so afraid to really open up because they just feel like it's going to be rejection. And Lord, will you break those walls down and let them feel comfortable enough and loved enough that they can deal with the deepest issues of their life and experience the freedom that comes in opening up and letting that stuff go. And so, Lord, do it in us and then do it through us. And so, Lord, I ask that you will in Jesus' name. Now, just why don't we just take a minute around the tables where we're at, share for a minute, pray for each other, and, be as open as you feel you can be. Maybe this is a good time for some of you to say, hey, I'm really struggling with this, and I feel safe enough that I could open that up this morning and pray with each other. And so let's just go ahead and take a minute and do it. And maybe you want to break it down even more. Maybe it's just a couple of you together. I'll kind of leave that to you, whether you just sit around the table or whether you break off into groups of two or three. But find some guys you can pray with. And